many people have seen the movie Lion? That's pretty good, actually. So today we're going to be watching the movie Lion, which is based on an autobiography written by Saru Brierley. It starts in 1987, and in this first clip, it's right after a moment when Saru and his older brother have jumped off of a train where they stole coal so that they can go trade it for milk and give that to their family. So we're going to meet their family, their mom, and his younger sister in this first clip.
Let's go play, guy.
सच में बोल कहाँ से लेके आए सही बोल गुड्डू मेरा सरू शकीला मैं निकलती हूँ शकीला का ख्याल कौन रखेगा मेरा सरू
चलो खा लो जल्दी तूने बहुत अच्छा काम किया है आज
मुझे भी आना है नहीं जा रहा
मैं एक हफ्ते के लिए जा रहा हूँ यहाँ पर शकीला के ध्यान कौन रखेगा
कल तू आएगा ना
तू बहुत छोटा है गोनी नहीं उठा सकता
मैं कुछ भी उठा सकता हूँ मैं भी आ सकता हूँ
छोटा है तू तुझे कुछ नहीं आ सकता मुझे जाने
मैं
दे
कुछ भी उठा सकता हूँ
सरू तुझे बोला ना मैं वहाँ पे रात भर काम करना पड़ेगा तू नहीं आएगा चल जा छोटा है तू जा सरू रहने दे
नहीं।
ये तो
मैं उठा सकता हूँ
ठीक है सरू उठना मेरी गलती थी तुझे यहाँ पे लेके आया रात के काम के लिए बहुत तू छोटा है इतनी रात में तू काम कर ही नहीं सकता सरू सरू मैं काम के लिए जा रहा हूँ मैं कल का काम निपट के आ जाऊंगा तू यही रुकना इधर जा मत
जलेबी
खाने
मुझे 2000 जलेबी
इधर ही रुक हाँ किधर जा मत
So what strikes me most about that scene is just the love that we see with Saru and his older brother for each other and also in their family. And I just love the relationship that they all have together. We obviously, their family lives in a very poor town in India. And according to a study by the World Bank, 276 million people, or about 23% of the population in India, live on less than $1.25 a day, which is actually pretty similar to the numbers compared to Guatemala, of what people live on in Guatemala. And for me, that's a really hard thing to even understand. It's just such a small amount of money to put into context. So sort of a funny way of putting that into context is, has anyone ever heard of the app called the Poop Salary? So this is a screenshot I took of the app. I don't actually have it on my phone because I don't use this app. but you can enter in your salary, and then every time you go to the bathroom, you push start poop and figure out how much money you make when you're in the bathroom. And some of us might procrastinate more than others, so you know, each visit could be a little bit different. so what I did was I wanted to see, what does that actually look like for some people in our community? So on the next slide, we have a picture of five of the people in my D group. And I got the four guys, including myself, to figure out what their average per visit trip to the bathroom is. And as a group, we're averaging about 49 cents a visit. So if we go like two or three times in a day, we're literally like making about the same money as Fatima, Saru's mom, does, and their family in a day in India. And that's kind of a funny example, and it's not something that I want to use to make light of that situation, but really more to point to just that true injustice, that I can literally just spend, you know, a couple minutes extra looking at Facebook while I sit on the toilet in the bathroom at work and make more money than Fatima does when she's carrying stones from one hill to another at these construction sites that she worked on. In the movie, we don't really learn that much about Fatima, Saru's mom. So I wanted to read a quick article, just some excerpts from an article by the Associated Press based on an interview that they had with his mom. Fatima was born to Hindu peasants who worked as near slaves in fields until her father died from a heart attack and her mother died a few months later after childbirth. At the age of 10, she was an orphan doing field work, harvesting crops and carrying cement. She married another orphan, and they moved to a small neighborhood of Ganeshtali with other day laborers. She dreamed that her sons would live in big homes nearby and give her 10 cents a day so she wouldn't have to work and could look after her grandchildren. But then her husband stopped coming home, stopped providing food, money, and eventually left. At that same time, she was pregnant with their daughter. Fatima was back where she had started, an abandoned woman with young children and no support. She was the poorest in the neighborhood of poor people, a charity case even for those who had nothing. When Gudu was 7, she went back into construction. Gudu and her son, Saru, age 3, began begging for food and loose change. Often there was no dinner, and she put them to bed with a glass of water. "Mom, give us food," they would beg. "There is none," she'd answer in shame. "I have nothing," she thought on those wretched nights, "but at least I have my children around me." So with that in mind, and as we kind of get to know Saru's family, let's see what happens next in this clip as they search for money in the train station.
Gudu.
Ah! गुड्डू गुड्डू से बहुत प्यार करता हूँ मम्मी, गुड्डू मुझे बहुत याद आ रही है तेरी।
बच्चा, मैं डॉक्टर हूँ।
In India, 180 children go missing every day, or 65,000 children in a year. And Saru's story is just one very dramatic story, but one of those stories of all those children that get lost every year. And as he's on the train, he's just being ripped away. I think the silence and the noise are such a paradox, because it's so loud and you can hear him screaming and nobody can hear him. But at the same time, it's so eerily quiet. And I think the actor just does an amazing job in that scene portraying what it would be like for a little 5 or 6 year old boy being torn away from everything that he cares about, from his family, from his community, from his mom. And even though I think that's a really dramatic example, obviously probably none of us have had that experience of being torn away on a train 1,600 kilometers away, I think we can still relate, because I think that we all have experiences like that in our lives, and some of them may seem more mundane and more commonplace, and others are really extreme. But we all have different trains in our lives, things that just literally drag us away from everything that we know and care about, and that train just kind of keeps chugging along. And I think the scene where it kind of zooms out and you see the mountain and just how vast and how far away he is from everything that he knows just really speaks to that for me. So one example from my life was the story of our daughter, Lilia. She was born at 29 weeks, and when we were leading up to her birth, we had a lot of doctor's appointments, and there was concern for my wife and for the baby. So we spent a good amount of time in the doctor's office and then also eventually in the hospital, where we ended up kind of living and expected that that would just sort of be our home until she was born. So kind of day and night came, and I would work from the hospital. Finally, one morning, January 12th, at 29 weeks, my wife was pregnant. The night before, we just had a really rough night, and Jen was in a lot of pain. So I decided to take a shower in the hospital bathroom, and I wasn't even able to even get in the shower. When I went in the bathroom, there was one nurse, and they were kind of calmly talking to Jen about how she was doing and how she felt from the night before. And then after a couple minutes, before I could even get in the shower, a nurse knocked on the door and asked me to come out. So I expected just to see that same nurse. But it was chaos, at least from my perspective. There were six nurses in there, and they were all doing different things. And I was handed a gown, and I was told to put it on, and that I might want to find my phone so I can take pictures. So that moment for me was just shocking. I didn't expect that. That was the moment that the train started chugging, when you can start hearing those wheels spinning. And Saru is on that train calling out to the girl, asking for help, and nobody can hear him. Nobody can understand what he's trying to say. So for me, that was that moment where I felt alone and scared and had no idea what was going to happen with my wife and with our baby. So they rolled her out of the room, and I was left standing alone in my very fancy hospital gown with my phone ready to go. And as they walked out, I called out to one of the nurses, call Lisa Dyer, because Lisa was working at Howard County at the time. And leading up to that, she would hang out with us and kind of in her Lisa way, just cheer us up and make us laugh and try to help us think about things outside of the hospital and all the craziness that was going on. So one of the nurses called Lisa on her phone and asked her to come down because there's some crazy guy in labor and delivery asking for you. I don't know why, but there's some guy down there that wants to talk to you. So Lisa, I talked to her about this about a week ago, and she said she gave all of her patients to another nurse and then sprinted from one unit of the hospital down to labor and delivery where we were. And she walked in that room, and I can still remember just the moment that she walked in. And I just collapsed in her arms. My knees just kind of like buckled under me. I don't even know how she held me up. But she did, and I don't know what she said really. I remember we kind of talked, and she was able to comfort me and just kind of get me ready for what was about to happen. And then suddenly I was in the delivery room. I don't really remember the transition from one to another, but we were there. And Jen and I were sitting, I was sitting, Jen was laying down, and we were crying and singing. Actually, the song that we're going to sing, Communion, is one of the songs that we sing. And praying and just hoping that we would hear the cry of our little 29-week baby girl. So we did. We heard her cry, and I got to see our 3-pound baby girl, who really looked more like an alien than a little infant. And over the next few weeks, we had a lot more difficulty. That train just kept chugging, and there was really still that uncertainty of where are we going to end up? Is this even going to be okay? Is it going to end up, will it work out in the end? So within the first week or so of her being in the hospital, she got a staph infection, and then after that, actually for that staph infection, we got a phone call from the NICU, which you never really want to get. You call them every day and ask them how your baby's doing, but we got a call from them that day. And that was another moment, like another train kind of comes along, and we drove to the hospital because we weren't sure if she would even make it through that day, but she did. And then the next thing was a brain bleed, which also can be, I mean, it's kind of common for preemies, but also very risky depending on how bad it is. And then 11 weeks later, after all of that drama and Lisa continuing to come in during her shift, during her lunch break, just hanging out with us and supporting us, being there with us, we took our baby home on a March spring beautiful day. And she's here today over in the nursery and doing awesome. She's a big chubby girl, and you would never know that she was a 3-pound preemie. So that's my story, but there's lots of other stories in our community. People here today that may have had stories like that, and they've kind of come to a certain end. Not that that hasn't still affected us as we continue to live our lives, but those trains are sort of over. Or some of us are on those trains right now and experiencing a lot of that scary, lonely emptiness. Or some of us have had that train stop in a place where we really didn't want it to. Like Saru, we've left him at this train station, and he's alone, and he's calling out to his mom, asking for his brother, and there's no one there. We experience things like losing parents or losing children or never being able to have children of our own at all. So those trains all sort of end out in different places. And I want to just take a little bit of time. That's later. So a verse that I'd like to read as an example of that is Psalm 63. O God, you are my God. Earnestly I search for you. My soul thirsts for you. My whole body longs for you. In this parched and weary land where there is no water. So we see examples like that or many other examples in the Bible where people cry out to God. And I think the question is it okay for us to cry out to God in that situation, to ask God for help? But where is God? Sometimes we don't even feel like God is listening, or the train is so loud that he can't even hear us. But I think people like Lisa, or people here in our community, are the people that are God for us in those situations, who come in and can be Jesus' hands and be his feet and love us when we're stuck on that train or we're in that train station and there's no one that... Literally, no one even knew Saru's language. He was so far from home that they couldn't even understand what he was saying. So we're going to jump forward a little bit to Saru meeting his adoptive parents. And what happens between the clip that we left off at and meeting his parents in Australia, if you've seen the movie, is he has a couple of scary run-ins where he almost gets kidnapped. And then he ends up at an orphanage, which is really more run like a juvenile detention center. But there's a social worker there that helps him find parents that adopt him in Australia.
This is where you live.
television. Do you know what a television is? Pictures.
What was it?
Pepper.
Yes, pepper.
That's right.
And?
Sauce.
Sauce.
Salt.
Salt. Very good.
You've come a long way, haven't you? Little one. I'm sure it hasn't been easy. And one day you'll tell me all about it. You'll tell me everything, who you are, everything. I'll always listen.
Saru has amazing parents that adopted him from India, and there was a interview with Saru's actual adoptive mom, where she talked about that moment, the first time that she met Saru, and what it was like, that she could tell that he had a lot of pain in his life. They really didn't know anything about his story, because the people in the orphanage just knew he was lost. They couldn't understand his language. And when he got there, she said that she could see that pain and loss in his eyes, but then she also could tell that he had been really loved and cared for. He was really quick to learn and really smart and had a sense of humor, and she could just tell that he had a loving, nurturing mom somewhere in India that he lost. And it broke her heart, you know, but it also was her son that she was just so thankful for, and thankful that she could step in and be that love for him that he had lost. I think that this clip is reflective of our church at Cedar Ridge as a community of people that can step in and intervene in each other's lives in big ways and small ways, just by, you know, giving a hug on a Sunday morning, or you know, in ways like my story of our experience in the hospital. And when we cry out to God and ask for help, I think that God brings people in our lives like people that we have here that can lean down like Saru's mom does in the bathtub and just soak us in and see all the pain that we have and see us for who we really are, for the joy that we have in our lives, and just see us as an entire person, just like Jesus would do if Jesus were there to step down and soak us in. And I think some of those, we talked about those trains in our lives, some of them could be things like you're just going from middle school to high school and graduating, and it's that scary sort of common thing that everyone does, but at the same time, something that can be really scary. Leaving home from high school and going to a college that might be out of town, where you live in a dorm room with somebody that you don't know anything about. Those kind of things in our lives, I think sometimes we overlook as things that are hard, but not necessarily something that you know, we should really feel like we need a lot of support with. But I think that all of those things God cares about, and God steps in and gives us people in our lives that can support us. So I'd like to take a moment. We're going to listen to a song. And if you could just relax and close your eyes. Try to reflect on what that train might be in your life. Maybe you're on it now. Maybe you're off and lost alone. Or maybe you've found someone to comfort you in your loss and help you figure out what's next in life. Now imagine God leaning down, whispering into your ear, like Saru's mom did in the bathtub. So you've come a long way, haven't you, little one? I'm sure it hasn't been easy. One day you'll tell me all about it. You'll tell me everything. Who you are, everything. I'll always listen. Always. In our next scene, we're going to make another big jump to 25 years later, where Saru is now 30 years old, and he has loving parents. He has another brother that was adopted from India, but he continues to want to try to find home, to try to find where he was born. And he realizes that he can use Google Maps or Google Earth to try to estimate from where his train started and how long he spent on the train and the speed that the train went, what his search radius would be for finding home. So we'll enter into that with Saru and see if he can find home.
wasn't a day. I didn't want to tell you.
So, I really hope she's dead. She needs to see how beautiful you are.
I really hope she's there. She needs to see how beautiful you are. I just love that scene. I think it's beautiful. It's the moment when I watched this movie that I decided that I wanted to use it for God in the movies. I just love the raw honesty that Saru's mom has, and the faith that she has, the willingness to let him go without knowing. He might not even find his mom at all. She might not be alive, or she may have moved. The chances of him finding her are really low. And she's just lets him go freely, loving him and allowing him to search for his birth mom without concern for herself as his adoptive mom, and just loves him exactly the way that he needs it. And I think it's just a beautiful example of God working through someone in our lives who steps in to help us on that train when we need it most. So Saru is going to fly back to India, and let's see if he finds his mom. This is a spoiler alert, by the way.
Thank you. looking at? She's so big. It's me, Saru. It's beautiful.
Sound asleep. I just want to say that I'm safe. I'm safe and the questions have been answered. There are no more dead ends. I found my mother and she thanks you both for raising me. She understands that you're my family. She's happy just knowing I'm alive. I found her, but that doesn't change who you are. I love you, Mum, so much. And you, Dad. And Mentos.
So I have a picture that I'd like to show of Saru. And this is, on the left, his